So, this social context that Heather just referred to, I want to pick up again what she was saying and talk a bit about what it is before we go and look at the model of Jesus, how he demonstrates how this is so important as an aspect of living as a follower of Jesus. It's a place where people can meet socially, hence the name, but where there's a clear intention of building relationship, of doing life together, of seeking to introduce people to Jesus, to make disciples. And it's something that various churches up and down the country and wider have found really helpful. But we're aware it's one of the most different things to what most churches have been doing for a long time. We were getting a bit close to this before COVID with Seniors Day and Church at Four, and they were really valuable activities. For those who don't know what they were, Seniors Day was where we met once a quarter with about 100 of our senior citizens, and we spent a day together and did all sorts of fun things, and that's starting up again in a slightly different form, and that's really good to see. Church at Four was when we met at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon for a very different way of engaging with God and with people, and it was really, really good. But some of the principles behind these social contexts push these boundaries even further. The groups typically, but not always, meet somewhere other than a church building. And here, we're working out what it means to go and make disciples as opposed to expecting people to come to us. So there's a very different dynamic there. And there's the idea of doing life with people, not just putting on events for people. It's about modeling what it means to follow Jesus and to live in relationship with him. It's about bringing God's blessing into situations where people feel at home and are open to building relationships and learning about Jesus. Let me just share some examples with you. Chichester Baptist Church down south, a church I've been to, the previous minister I know quite well, they've been hosting what they call alternative gatherings for about 10 years. And these take place once a month at the time of the main church service. So on one Sunday, there'll be two or three groups off doing something. Another Sunday, there'll be another couple of groups off doing something, and so on. And their range of groups include a group for creative knitting, crochet, and needlework. A group for those who enjoy playing golf together. A group that visits people in a residential care home. A mountain bike riding group. A walking group. So it's an opportunity for people with a shared interest to build relationships with those who do not currently follow Jesus, as they are invited to be part of that group. And there is a clear, intentional focus of spending time talking about Jesus and sharing about faith. At the Beacon Church in Stafford, that until recently was led by a friend of mine, somebody who I was at college with, he's gone on to do something else. They have a group that gathers in a pub and is very much engaged in their local community. Don't know if they still do it, but a few years ago, they had a short gathering over lunch for people from the industrial estate on which their building is located. As Heather says, groups that operate in this way are often referred to as missional communities, and that's what this Super Sunday is about. And in that, we're looking to see how that enables those who are already part of the church family to build deeper relationships with each other and with God, and to provide a context into which friends can easily be invited and experience something of what it means to follow Jesus. And yes, at the moment, it does involve a particular group of people in the church. But as Heather was saying, we believe these types of missional communities are vitally important for the church as a whole. And we'd like to explore at some stage what other communities could be formed. So even if you're not involved in that particular community, please do pray for it, for how it fits into the whole life of the church and for how we take this concept forward. And as Heather said, if you've got any thoughts or ideas about any of this, any other communities that might be good to think about putting in place, or any concerns about this idea, please do speak with us. Andy Glover, who along with his wife Sue lead HBC Church in Chester, told me that over the last few years, 80% of those who have come to faith there were in missional communities. That's where it happened. And they were in those communities for a long time, sometimes up to 2 years, before they came to a Sunday gathering. That was where they had a relationship with people. That was where they met with Jesus. That is where they had the privilege recently of baptizing people who had come to follow Jesus. It's an exciting way of reaching out in a different way. So what do these groups look like? They're typically larger than a house group. We're talking about small groups and how they fit into this next week. But they're smaller than the whole church gathering, between 20, 40 people, that sort of size. So it's a group that's small enough where it's possible to know at some level everybody who's in it, but large enough to engage in significant missional engagements together. It's an exciting thing to explore, to think into, to pray about. This morning we're going to look at a couple of different examples from the life of Jesus to see how he engages with this and to see how he involves his followers in this, to see how he uses these contexts to reach out and to bless others. The video that Heather showed talked about one of those examples where Jesus met with Matthew. We're going to pick up some others in a few moments. And the first one, we're going to look at where Jesus sends out some of his followers on mission. We're going to read what happens as Jesus does this. We're going to read from Luke chapter 10, first 11 verses. There is lots in this story. We're just going to pick out a few things this morning. Please take time when you get home to read and reflect on it further yourselves. But let's read the first 11 verses of Luke chapter 10. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go. I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. Do not take a purse or bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone on the road. When you enter a house, first say, 'Peace to this house.' If someone who promotes peace is there, your peace will rest on them, and if not, it will return to you. Stay there, eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Do not move around from house to house. When you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what is offered to you. Heal those who are ill and tell them, 'The kingdom of God has come near to you.' But when you enter a town and are not welcomed, go into its streets and say, 'Even the dust of your town we wipe from our feet as a warning to you. Yet be sure of this, the kingdom of God has come near.'" So in this story, we see something really special. Jesus is engaging his own followers in the work he is doing. Jesus could have chosen to do all the stuff he did just on his own. He was certainly capable of doing so. But he chose to involve others. And here, there's 72 that he sends out. One thing is worth noting is that not many of these 72 had been followers of Jesus for very long. They could not have been. His public ministry as a whole only lasted for about 3 years. So they did not have decades of experience of working out what it means to be a follower of Jesus. There were many things they wouldn't have known the answers to, but they were still sent out by Jesus on his behalf to do his work. We should be encouraging. We should be expecting everyone to be involved in the work that Jesus is calling to, regardless of how long we have known him, how many questions we don't need the answers to. It's part of who we are as followers of Jesus, whether we've been following him for a week, or for 50 years. So here, Jesus sends a relatively large group of people, people he was prepared to trust in going out in his name, and he sent them out in pairs. At that time, heralds, who had been given a message by someone in authority, were often sent out in pairs. And it's possible that Jesus was adopting that practice here. So from that group of people, he sends them out to go into different places and to communicate his message. And this can be a good model in social contexts today, where different people have different gifts and capabilities and are able to take on specific responsibilities, with it all working together to complete the mission of the overall group. So here, Jesus is sending them off ahead of him to prepare the way. He's planning to visit the towns and the villages to which he's sending them, and so they're a form of advance party to speak about Jesus, to explain that he's coming, to prepare people to welcome Jesus and to engage with him. They're going into someone else's context, somebody else's home, somebody else's village, a place where people live, and bringing blessing and the message of Jesus into it. In our day, that could be going into the communities in which we live. It could be engaging with people in the things that they get involved in the social clubs that they're part of, in the activities that are important to them. And one of the things that's so important here is that these people knew that they had been sent. They knew to whom they had been sent. They knew they had a mission. They knew what that mission was. And they knew those who they were working with to carry out that mission. And as I was thinking about this, I thought, wouldn't it be great if, as a church, thanks, Chris, if as a church, every single person here, everyone on Zoom, everybody who's off engaging in different ways this morning, those who are not here for whatever reasons this morning, if every single person had a clear sense of the mission that they were involved in, where each person knew the people they were trying to reach, the place they were trying to bless, the projects they were part of, and that every single person knew that around them, supporting them, working with them, were others who were excited and passionate about the same mission, the same task that Jesus has given us. There'd be that sense of shared engagement. Even if this group was doing something and this group was doing something else, together we would be doing what God has called us to do. It's one of the things that we believe is so important that we move towards over the next few years, so that we can all play the part we can play in seeing God's kingdom grow in our town. Then this is the idea of a person of peace. Jesus tells his followers to go into a house, and the culture of the day would have virtually guaranteed that they would have received hospitality. That's what happened. And they were to speak words of peace and blessing over that house. We get this in verse 5 of the chapter that we read. And then the key thing that they are to identify is whether there is someone in that house who promotes peace. If so, they'll be well received and there's an opportunity to develop relationships and to proceed further. And if not, what Jesus is saying is the likelihood of them and their message being received is much, much smaller. So what's the idea behind someone promoting peace? And why is that important to us today? I think it could refer to one of two things. That this person of peace is someone who is already interested in the words and message of Jesus and seeking to live their lives accordingly. Or it could be someone who is open to hearing more, open to spending time with these messengers, to hearing and reflecting on the message that has been given. And what this reminds us is that there are some who are open to finding out about Jesus, and there are some who are not. Jesus recognizes this when he tells a story of a farmer going out to sow seed in a field. Some seed not taking root at all, other seeds producing a great harvest. We do not necessarily know which sort of person we are speaking to when we start that conversation, when we get engaged with them. But we can get an idea based on how they respond. And what Jesus is saying is that if you find someone or some place that is open to what you are saying, then stay with them. Develop that relationship. Continue that conversation. Otherwise, go on to find someone else or focus somewhere else. That's what we get to in the last piece of those the last piece of the passage we read. Please hear me right. We have a responsibility to try and communicate the message of Jesus with everyone. But we also need to seek to recognize those who are receptive to that message and focus on them. And this is one of the things that these social contexts can do, is they seek to develop relationship with people and see who are open to hearing more about Jesus. Even Jesus found he was not welcomed everywhere. We find this in verse 53 of the previous chapter, Luke 9. Let's focus our attention where we believe God is guiding us to those within whom his Spirit is already at work. Let's work with God and with what God is doing. There is much more that could be said about this passage, including tracking some of what these sent messengers were able to accomplish and how they rejoiced when they returned to Jesus, how they spoke about the wonderful things they had seen, and how Jesus himself fully shared in their rejoicing. Please do take time to think about that. But we're going to leave that story there this morning and look at another way in which Jesus engaged in a social context. And here, it's somewhat different, where Jesus is joining in with what others are doing. He's not sort of creating an event, or in the previous case, sending people out. He's going and joining in with things that are already taking place. Going to something that someone else has already organized, like the feast that Matthew organized that we saw on that video, where he gets involved, where he makes a difference. And there are a number of examples of this. Here are three. There's Luke 5, 27 to 32, the one that Heather was talking about earlier, where Jesus was at a feast organized by Levi. Levi is another name for Matthew. In Luke 7, Jesus having dinner with a Pharisee. In Luke 19, another tax collector, where Jesus goes and spends time with Zacchaeus. And in each one, Jesus is invited into someone's setting. To a party he's thrown with Jesus as the honored guest, to a dinner, or into his house. And in each context, Jesus brings blessing, and people are drawn closer to God. In each context, Jesus is criticized for spending time with those who some thought were unworthy. But we get the sense that Jesus is entirely at ease there. He welcomes the opportunity to spend time with such people. He's focused on bringing blessing and healing and hope into that context. Very much doing things with people and not doing things to them. So we're going to look at one of these to think about the setting, to look at how Jesus engaged and how he made a difference, to think about how we can do something similar in our own situations. But do please take the time to read and reflect on all these stories to see how we can live out and follow the example of Jesus today. But the one we're going to look at is Jesus having dinner with a Pharisee in Luke 7, 36 to 50. A quick summary of the story. A Pharisee invited Jesus to have dinner with him. While they were eating, a woman who was described as living an immoral lifestyle comes into the room and anoints the feet of Jesus with ointment. This is seen as very wrong by the Pharisee. And Jesus, recognizing that, responds by telling a story about two people. They've been let off paying back their debts, with the idea that the one who'd been forgiven the greatest debt would appreciate it much more. And so Jesus commends the women and the woman and speak words of forgiveness and blessing over her. And his words and actions surprise the other guests and cause them to wonder who Jesus is and what he is doing. It is a strange story. Things that might seem strange to us, things that would have seemed strange to the people at the time. Because Pharisees are often represented as those with whom Jesus was in dispute and disagreement over their understanding of the law and what was involved in being right with God. Sometimes, particularly later on in his ministry, Jesus was very critical of them. But here, the Pharisee invites him to dinner, and Jesus willingly accepts. The Pharisee may have been simply welcoming and honoring a visiting preacher, maybe after a service in a synagogue, or been wanting to see Jesus up close and find out a bit more. What it does show us is that Jesus was willing to go into many different settings, even ones that could potentially be challenging, in order to see God's kingdom grow. No one to be left out. No one to be avoided. We might think it strange that partway through this meal, a woman just wanders in and gets involved in what is going on. Not something we would normally expect if we were having dinner in someone's house. But in the time of Jesus, these types of events would have been public, with anyone free to go and come and see what was going on. But such a woman, possibly a prostitute, would not have been welcomed. And so it took great courage for her to come and to take on such a central role in the story. But Jesus allows her to touch with him, to touch him. He speaks with her. He ignores all the other guests and focuses on this woman in need who is seeking this chance for a new life. Sometimes when we, or at least when I, find myself in a strange setting, the temptation can be to conform to what is going on around us, to defer to the people who've organized the event. I remember when I was back in Tamworth, I was invited to a Rotary Club dinner. I was there to speak about the work we were doing for the homeless and to encourage a donation from that group to support what we were doing. And it worked, which was really good. But I was aware I didn't know the rules of the evening and didn't know many of the people. It wasn't really a problem, as most of the time Joe and I were just sitting at a table with a group of people chatting and eating. We knew how to do that. But a lot of the things that were going on, the actual events of the evening, were foreign to me. I didn't understand what they were talking about. And the easy thing was to do was just let it all happen, and I did what I was there to do, and it was all fine. But in this type of setting, Jesus normally seems to make a difference. He changes the conversation. He changes the focus. He causes people to think about things differently. He asks questions that are difficult to answer to encourage people into God's kingdom. He is disruptive. They go into many different situations, to events and activities that are being organized by others, and to bring God's changing presence into those contexts. I get the sense that if Jesus spent much time in one of these settings without doing something to move forwards the kingdom of God, he would have seen it as a wasted opportunity. So what does this mean for us? It's a challenge for each one of us individually as we go into different situations this week. Are we looking for those opportunities to change the conversation, to change the focus, to do something of kingdom value? Something to think about and to pray into. But our focus today is doing things as part of a wider group, as part of a group of people who've come together with a shared passion to make a difference for Jesus. And one of the things that can make these types of groups really effective is finding things that are already going on, getting involved, and then making a kingdom of God-shaped difference. This can be worked out in lots of different ways. Choosing to go litter picking around an area, which can often provide an opportunity to explain to the local residents why we're doing it and inviting them to join in. And it's great to see that one of our house groups is planning on doing this. Maybe getting involved in supporting a local school and finding opportunities to demonstrate and speak about the love of Jesus. Going into prisons, making a real difference in the lives of offenders. Many different opportunities that these groups can identify, can get involved in and make a difference. It involves recognizing what is going on around us, responding with a desire to help and get involved, having a clear intention of doing it differently because we are followers of Jesus, seeking to see others come to know Jesus and to see God's kingdom grow. Great opportunities for us all to get involved in being blessings, and something we want to continue to explore and encourage and develop in the months ahead. And a challenge for each of us to reflect and to pray into. Is this the sort of thing I want to be involved in? Where could I make a difference? Who could I do it with? So please do think, please pray, please explore, please talk with us about what it means for us each to be living in these types of communities.